welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turn the Page. I'm your host today, Jen, and I am here with the author of an absolutely gorgeous queer coming-of-age romance that just it blew me away, and it really stayed with me for a very long time after reading it. So welcome to the show. Can I ask you to introduce yourself and your book?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. My name is Parisa Akbari, and I'm the author of Just Another Epic Love Poem, which is, as you said, a queer young adult romance that combines poetry and prose and text messages and other ephemera to tell the story of the main character, Mitra, and her best friend, Bee, who are seniors in Catholic school and have been writing this never-ending poem between the two of them back and forth since they were 13. And now that they're seniors, they are grappling with a lot of changes, including falling in love with one another and figuring out what to do after high school, and Mitra trying to figure out if she wants to reconnect with her mom, who has been estranged from her life for a few years. And the poem is kind of the place or the touchstone where they get to explore a lot of these things and kind of find a way through what feels like some really tough challenges in their lives.
It's so, so lovely. And Mitra and Bee are both such beautifully realized characters. And before we talk too much about them, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about your journey to this book, how you got into writing and sort of how it led you to this project.
Yeah, I've always really enjoyed writing. I definitely was the kid who had a notebook in school and was writing my own little stories when I was supposed to be focusing on other things in class, and definitely reading under the table also. So that's been something that I've enjoyed for a long time. But I really started to dive into writing young adult literature maybe around 2017, 2018, when I was feeling a lot of despair for the things that were happening around the country, and also just the position that young people were in, and feeling like as adults, we had to do better to serve young people and to protect them and care for them, and also to make sure that they understood that they had autonomy and that they could have bright, promising futures, and they could have chosen families where they feel loved and accepted. And I was working at a nonprofit girls community center at the time as an adolescent therapist. And just hearing the stories of the girls and the non-binary youth and trans youth that I worked with, wanting to be able to offer something that might give a bit of optimism or a bit of connection, or even just a reflection for somebody to be able to see themselves represented in a way that I didn't have access to when I was that age.
Yeah, that's a really lovely context for it. And I think it really speaks to why it hits so hard in a lot of ways. Something I'm super curious about is, you know, your background in therapy that you just mentioned. This is a very internal book for Mitra. Like, you really get inside her head and her struggles. And I'm wondering, like, if you feel like your professional background has shaped your writing interests, perhaps.
I do think so. I think that in one sense, I have a lot higher expectations and more belief in young adults than I think maybe the average adult has, because I spend so much time with them and I understand how fiercely creative and how incredible and how driven they can be and motivated toward change. And also, I have this immediate access to understanding the frustrations that I could relate to when I was that age too, of facing all of these adult problems like racism or homophobia, or just like the emotional turmoil of what they're going through, and also not having the adult decision making that, you know, adults get to choose what happens in their lives to a great degree, and teens really have a lot of things decided for them, where they're going to school, what they're wearing, if they have uniforms like Mitra and B do, what they're eating. They don't get to vote. They don't get to choose a lot of the things that directly affect them. They don't choose their families. And so I felt like from my experience in therapy, I could speak to some of the very real frustrations, and the complexity of emotions that you hold when you're faced with adult challenges, but you don't have the autonomy that adults have.
Yeah, that is captured really evocatively, I think. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy about it is that it takes that emotional complexity and the turmoil very seriously and treats it with a kind of respect, I think, that adults don't always have for teen feelings and for teen issues, you know, like we often like to, you know, remind teens that, like, oh, you're gonna, you know, look back on this time and wish it was so simple again. And it is so not simple, like, especially in the modern world today. Like, you're dealing with really intense feelings and a really pivotal transitional moment in your life and figuring out who you are. And yeah, like, how do you get yourself back into that headspace of, you know, that really unique and pivotal point in your life?
When I first started working at this girls' nonprofit, one of the things that I learned in my training there was about adultism, which is basically the idea that young people are not granted the same rights and privileges as adults, and that they're really belittled in some ways. And obviously, there's developmental things at play that teens and children have different brains, and they're developing a lot of skills, and they're learning things for the first time. And so they need to be supported in whatever developmental phase they're in. But at the same time, we can do that in a way that's respectful without belittling them and saying, oh, it's just puppy love, or these aren't real problems, or you only feel this way so intensely because your hormones are going crazy, or whatever it is. So trying to really do justice to the fact that these emotions are valid and these experiences are real and hard. And because oftentimes they're the first time that someone has experienced heartbreak or longing, it's going to be more intense and it's going to feel a lot more life or death. And that's something that I think we can all look back on and remember. When I was writing this book, I tried to think about just how dire things might feel and how intense things might feel when you have no map for what's coming next. You have no compass telling you, oh, I've been through a breakup, or I've experienced this type of embarrassment. You are just having everything with fresh eyes, and that is really an intensity that I wanted to bring into the story.
Yeah, that intensity is expressed very nicely in the poetry that they write to each other. They're both beautiful poets, which means that you are doubly a beautiful poet. And I was wondering if, you know, does the writing process change for you when you're writing prose versus poetry? Do you bring a different kind of mindset or something to it? Or like, yeah, like, how do you access the poetry bit of this?
It did feel like a different process to me. I think that when I outlined the book, I thought I would just write it as it appears, that I would write prose sections and then the poetry and then this and then that. But I found that it was hard for me to switch back and forth between maybe like the creative sides of my brain. And so oftentimes I would wait to feel like I was in a poetic mindset, and maybe I'd be listening to a particular music, or oftentimes I wrote the poetry at night because I felt like I had more freedom. My brain was a little more tired, and so I had less self-criticism and maybe some fewer rules about the way that I wrote and the way that we structure things in prose. I tried to break out of that with poetry. So oftentimes I would write prose for a while and then wait until I felt like it was the right moment and then go back and work in the structure of poetry that I wanted to work in. At the same time, I think I did want to have a communication between the two. So being able to bring some of the lyricism into the prose and have Mitra's internal monologue have some poetic elements to it, and then being able to express some key plot points through the poetry so that it felt necessary the way that the prose feels necessary, so that it isn't just like an interstitial that maybe doesn't offer anything new.
Yeah, and I think it lends the character some really lovely complexity too, you know, because you get to think about the way that the poetry they're writing interacts with what they are actually saying to each other directly, you know, and all the things that they say in certain ways, but not other ways. And it felt just very authentic to like a very quintessential teen girl experience, that like just poetry being really important, you know, and poetry kind of like being your journal a little bit, and it being easier to express a lot of things in that mode. Maybe when you can't access it like in more direct speech or communication, you know?
Totally. That's how I felt, that I definitely was a nerdy kid who read and wrote a lot of poetry when I was a teen. And I think one of the draws can be that there's so much space for metaphor, and metaphor can give this expansiveness to feelings that maybe people might struggle with in prose. So when something does feel so heightened and intense, and you can use a metaphor to express that, I think it can feel validating for the teen to be able to say, that's exactly it. Like, it feels like this. It feels like an explosion or a burst of light, or it feels like a fish hook that's ripping you apart. So being able to express things that are so immense in a way that's really concise and visual, because we're such visual people, and we're really sensory people too. Being able to offer those images and those sensory details that teens can really relate to on a visceral level.
Ooh, that is so interesting. Yeah, you know, yeah, that makes me wonder, like, to what extent, you know, metaphors maybe like can help teens identify the feelings that they're maybe feeling for the first time, you know, like that's a really interesting way to look at it. What did you do to sort of distinguish their poetic voices from each other in your head? Did you have like different styles or different techniques that you like to use for each of them?
I did. When I first conceptualized the characters, I thought about Mitra being this character who was very self-contained and afraid. And she's got certain elements in her life that are really important to her, like the family setup she has with her dad and her sister, and she's got her best friend B. And these few pieces of the puzzle are really the rock that she stands on. Those are the things that are reliable and important to her. And so there's a lot of fear about those things changing or losing some aspect of that dynamic. And I think in her poetry, you can see that her lines are pretty sparse, and she tends to follow rules a bit more in the way that she writes. And then with B, even though Mitra and B have so much in common and they're best friends and they have a common language after so many years of being connected, B still does have a different voice because she's more expressive and she's more expansive. She takes up more space, she's messier, she definitely breaks more rules than Mitra. And so her poetry tends to be a bit more, a bit more robust, that her lines are longer. She's a little less rule bound in the way that she writes. She kind of takes more risks, I think, in her poetry, at least in the beginning. And so my hope is that a reader can see that, oh, these two people are really connected, and this poetry flows together and it's coherent in that way, but they're very different and they have different voices at the same time.
Yeah, they're distinguished very nicely. And I think it's nice too, to sort of see like how they influence each other over time too, like both in their thoughts and how they express themselves. I am a particular fan of the like introvert extrovert pairing, because I think despite being on a podcast, I think I do lean toward the introvert when it comes to like one-on-one interactions, and having like an emotional support extrovert around is really helpful sometimes. And so, yeah, like, can you talk about how you think like that dynamic, you know, like in any romance, I'm really interested in the interplay of like the things that are bringing them together and the things that are pushing them apart, you know, and how those things play together. Can you talk a little bit about like that tension?
Absolutely. Coming from a therapy background and studying some aspects of like personality. I had a lot of fun when I create characters. I like to think about what are their different aspects of their personality. And so, you know, part of what draws Mitra and B together is that they are very expressive in their ideas and in their thoughts, and they're very like intellectually matched. And they also have a lot in common with their queerness and their experience of being two brown girls in a school that is pretty conservative and pretty strict. But at the same time, B comes in with maybe kind of a contained extroversion because she's in an environment where she doesn't really get to find a lot of her people, but she comes in with this energy and this, you know, desire to connect with someone who feels similar to her. And she really reaches out for Mitra. And Mitra, as somebody who is more contained and more tightly bound, she really embraces the invitation to come out of her shell when she feels seen. And so I think that draws them together. And at the same time, Mitra, with having a bit more fear and anxiety and more, you know, love of rules and keeping things very regulated and keeping things the same, can be frustrating for B. And B wants to break out of that. She wants to go to the UW for college. She's so excited to experience everything new. She can't wait to get out of their high school, Holy Trinity. And Mitra is afraid of things changing, afraid that she'll lose B when they are in a different environment and Mitra's not the only one who gets her. So I think there's this like tension or this push and pull between wanting to believe that things can be better and being so afraid of letting go of what you have, both in the way that they are transforming from friends to girlfriends, and also in the way that they're moving from this constricted environment in high school toward becoming adults.
Well, that's a really interesting point. I think that, like, yeah, embarking on a new relationship and that transition between high school and college are both, I guess, both opportunities for people to sort of be like, what am I going to take with me and what am I going to leave behind? You know, and like, usually I think that is, or at the time for me, I thought of it as an exciting process, but I could totally see too how it could be anxiety producing. I was not in a relationship at the time, so I didn't have that whole aspect. But yeah, one thing I have to make a little hard turn is the book itself, the book that they've been passing back and forth since they were 13. Could you talk a little bit about how you came up with the rules that they agreed on for the book? And maybe you know, what was the conception? What was like the inception point for the book? Like, how did it occur to you? It's such a really cool idea, and it is so quintessentially like that part of your life. You know, it's just perfect for that age.
Yeah, when I was a graduating senior, my best friend was a junior, and we spent so much time together in classes. We always were hanging out at our lockers, and then after school, we were spending time together, and we lived in the same neighborhood. And I really was concerned about, you know, when I leave and I go off to college, our friendship is going to change and things are going to look different. And I want us to stay connected. And I knew that I had, you know, social media and texting and phone calls and all of that. But there's an element of friendship that I think is particular to the teen years where you're constantly around each other, whether you choose to be or not. You're always together in school and you have all these little micro moments of contact. And for us at the time, a lot of that was written. So, like passing notes back and forth, slipping each other letters or messages in the vents of our lockers. We would write silly poems, songs. My friends and I all had this handwritten way of connecting to each other. And so, to try to capture that, I got this big journal for my best friend, Emily, and I. And I put some photos of us in it, and I wrote a little note about how it could be this way that we stay connected after I left. And we started passing it back and forth. And even when we were living in different states and later different countries, we would put like magazine scraps, photos, letters. We would talk about the fun things happening in our lives, but also the really serious things that maybe were hard to verbalize. And We still have it, and we've been sharing it for, more than a decade now. And that, I think, was the seed for me to think about the never-ending poem in my book. We didn't have rules for our journal, but I thought that with a poem, Mitra and B would kind of develop a natural rhythm of the way that they write back and forth. And because they're still in the same place, they're going to have really frequent opportunities to trade it. And so there would be some kind of universe around which they operate. And one of the things that I wanted to bring through in the poetry that they trade is that it's like a never-ending conversation. And so in order to have a sense of like a call and response, I wanted each girl's section of the poem to end on one word, and then the next girl has to start with that same word, so that it's like she's picking up the trail or the thread. Even if she's talking about something different, she is continuing the narrative that she got from her friend. So that was a fun rule for them, and then a challenging rule for myself to put that into action. But I really enjoyed kind of having to work myself out of puzzles that I created. And then they had rules like being honest with each other, which of course is a rule that you're going to break sometimes, and not going back on what they said. So really, like we were talking about with respecting young people's experiences, they want to respect that anything they said is important and that it stays present and that it's a testament to whatever they were going through. So those were some of the rules that I thought they might implement when they're creating this never-ending poem.
Yeah, I really love the rules, and I love the no terminal punctuation rule too. Like that is, it's so sweet, and it really does speak, I think, to how teens write poetry. Thank you for sharing this book with us. Like it's just so lovely, and I'm so excited for our listeners and readers to get a hold of it. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I hope that teens and adults alike can tap into some of the emotions that they felt at that time, and also to see that poetry can be accessible to them, whoever they are and whatever identities they hold, that it's something they can turn into their own form of self-expression.
Yeah, it's a really lovely way to find yourself. And I hope people take that to heart. So thank you. Listeners, it's now your turn. You're going to check out Just Another Epic Love Poem. When you hear this, it will be available. So head over to your favorite library or independent bookstore, wherever you like to go for your books. Thanks so much for joining us. It is now time to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.